Aaron Rodgers has suffered a lot, so others should suffer as well, and more. Nobody has ever called him on the trauma, cruelty, and egotism in this toxic stew that therapy and self-exploration have yet to correct. Rodgers seems hell-bent on recommitting the sins of his elders, like the fraternity brother who, after being hazed to within an inch of his life as a freshman, decides that rather than examine the hellscape he went through, instead, future pledges shall be subjected to exactly what he went through, plus whatever bonus throw-ins he's come up with in the meantime, in an attempt to make the experience exponentially worse. This while not one of his fraternity brothers tries to argue that that's a counterproductive and dangerous waste of time. Maybe if Rodgers' draft night had gone differently and he'd ended up someplace other than Green Bay, like the 49ers, the team of his boyhood, he wouldn't have tried to hold this entire NFL season hostage, hoping to have everyone who cares one whit about the NFL hanging on his every word to learn whether and where he might play next season, and who will deserve the accordant credit and blame for his ultimate decision. On this episode of Wrecking the Toy Department, where we won't just stick to sports because we don't have the privilege of doing so, we'll trace the 18-year revenge tour that's been Aaron Rodgers' NFL career. This is the scrappy underdog story of a quarterback from the rural Northern California town of Chico, who used a draft night embarrassment in 2005 as his fuel to engineer what has been, without a doubt, a Hall of Fame career, a Super Bowl title, 4 regular season MVP awards, and the rewriting of the Packers franchise records previously held by his predecessor, Brett Favre. As Rodgers would write the screenplay of this postseason, we've reached the point where our protagonist is at a crossroads. Would he, as he approaches age 40, come back to the only team he's ever played for and lead them to a second Super Bowl title, something even the great Favre couldn't manage? Would he leave town as the good guy done wrong, forced into the NFL wilderness to finish his career as the conquering hero for a long-suffering franchise like the Raiders or the Jets? Or would he bow out to the adoring cheers of his millions of fans, universally recognized as the best Packer ever, who, unlike that other guy who hazed him as a rookie, played his entire career in Green Bay? To bring this story to life as fully as possible, we'll speak to some of the most meaningful, impactful people in Aaron Rodgers' life. There's his loving family, his parents Darla and Ed, his brother Jordan, the loves of his life, Olivia Munn and Danica Patrick, his closest Packers friends, Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur, along with special guests Brett Favre, Jordan Love, and Christian Watson, and of course, his most enduring and devoted fan, the State Farm Insurance ad campaign cheesehead, whose one line in every commercial was, "Rodgers!" All right then, let the love fest begin. We'll go out to the guest line to speak with the two people Rodgers says he couldn't have done this without. Mom and Dad, you're on the line. Welcome. That's odd. Seems we've been disconnected. Let's try again. Brett Favre, what did you think of Rodgers when your team drafted him back in 05? Did you have any idea then that he'd be the giant of the game he is today? My apologies. We appear to be having some technical issues with the phone lines. Folks, it seems I'm severely mistaken. None of the aforementioned people want to speak with us. I've been told it has nothing to do with us. They just don't have a good word to put in about Rodgers. They're referring us to previous statements wrapped in as nice a bow as possible. On a 2021 episode of Running Wild with Bear Grylls, Danica Patrick, in reference to her most recent boyfriend, talked about having had her heart broken on both the sad and joyful ends of the relationship spectrum. Though Patrick did not mention him by name, Glamour magazine speculated she was talking about Rodgers, whom she'd broken up with the previous summer. In 2016, Rodgers' younger brother Jordan was a contestant and the eventual winner on The Bachelorette. When The Bachelorette, JoJo Fletcher, visited Rodgers' family in California for the hometown date episode, Aaron was nowhere to be found. Jordan had said earlier in the season, quote, "I have a great relationship with my brother Luke. Me and Aaron really don't have much of a relationship. It's just kind of the way he's chosen to do life. and I chose to stay close with my family, my parents, and my brother," unquote. In her fly on the wall interview, Fletcher said Jordan Rogers was, quote, "no one's brother. He comes from a family with so much love to give," end quote. I don't know that there's a more time-efficient way to paint Aaron as the family villain. Olivia Munn, speaking on Naked with Kat Sadler, the podcast hosted by the former E! News anchor, had this to say about a former relationship with a person she didn't name. She said her ex asked her to turn down professional opportunities and described the relationship as such, quote, "we had been in calm waters for a long time. It's always calm waters. And then all of a sudden the boat capsized. I think a lot of women and men who are in relationships are like this, where you're just walking on eggshells and you're just happy any time. You can breathe a little bit, even though you don't realize that you have a cinder block on your chest the whole time. You're taking in little sips of air. When it capsized, I was still in the emotional place that I'd been in for those years, which wasn't a good place. And then when you go through something like that, you do truly feel worthless," end quote. Her most recent boyfriend at that point was Rogers. When the Camp Fire, which damaged nearly 20,000 buildings and killed 18 people, burned an area equivalent to the city of Chicago near Chico in 2018, Aaron Rogers donated $1 million in equipment to the town of Paradise, which had been destroyed by the fire. In response to Aaron's actions, Jordan wrote this since-deleted post on Twitter. "Please donate, spread awareness, and send love. But when your own mom is home alone during the fires, car packed, ready to evacuate, and you miss the fundamental first step of compassion, calling your parents to make sure they are safe, everything else just feels like an act." Oof, this is not turning out to be the feel-good story we thought it would be. So where did it all go sour? Was it draft day when Rogers was the last player to leave the green room after falling to Green Bay at number 24? Ah, the green room, where you hang with the other top draft picks. People ask if you're comfortable, bring you food and drink, and then it starts to empty out. Gradually, time slows, and the room grows smaller, stuffier, definitely less inviting. Frustration or perhaps embarrassment grow, and the green room becomes more like solitary confinement, the moment less celebratory and more a chance to finally exhale in relief before lashing out. First in an interview with WISN, the ABC affiliate in Milwaukee, and then KPIX, the CBS affiliate in San Francisco.
April 23rd,
the Green Bay Packers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback in California.
Not a lot of things went the way we thought they'd go, but I'm just so excited about being able to go to a team that wants me.
How disappointed are you that you will not be a 49er?
Not as disappointed as the 49ers will be that they didn't draft me.
Here we are nearly 18 years later, and Rodgers chooses to upstage the first Super Bowl ever to feature two black starting quarterbacks, Kansas City's Patrick Mahomes and Philadelphia's Jalen Hurts. Kind of a huge deal to tell the Pat McAfee Show he's heading back to where it all started.
You normally don't really throw in this time of year. Have you thought about throwing this year?
Well, I'm still in the art of contemplation about my future, so
Is that real? Are we really contemplating playing football again still? Is that like a heavy thought, yeah?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it's a real thing, 100%. And that's why I think it's going to be important to get through this week and then to take my, my isolation retreat and just to be able to contemplate all things my future and then make a decision that I feel like is best for me moving forward and in the highest interest of my happiness and then move forward.
Inside the Hobbit-like structure where Aaron Rodgers went to recharge.
It does look like it's in the Shire a little bit.
Yeah. So it's a partially underground Hobbit-like structure with 300 square feet of space devoid of light, with a queen bed, a bathroom, and a meditation-like mat on the floor.
Sounds like the green room in 2005. Why the self-isolation and self-flagellation? It's because Rogers has become the drama king of Green Bay. In the same way Ferris Bueller became Abe Froman, the sausage king of Chicago. And the maitre d' who refuses to seat Ferris in his snotty, friends, represents everyone who snubbed Rogers on his way up. Rogers wasn't even a bit character when this drama started back in 2002, the first time Brett Favre flirted with retirement. By 2005, 8 years and just two postseason wins removed from their last Super Bowl appearance, the Packers selected Rodgers to replace Favre, who was 35, an age considered to be ancient at the time for any QB not named Elway. To nobody's surprise, Favre hemmed and hawed about returning each offseason, skipped as much training camp and summer workouts as possible, and took no interest in anything Rodgers-related. Left to his own devices, Rodgers got the second stringers together to work out, practice, and get to know each other. Favre, meanwhile, had two down years before an absolute renaissance performance in 2007. At age 38, he finished second in league MVP voting and led the Packers to the NFC Championship game, the fourth time in his career he'd done so. But the Packers couldn't take advantage of two Giants' missed field goals, and after a second Favre interception, his last pass as the Packers quarterback, the Giants won in overtime. After the loss, Favre said, quote, "For me, I kept thinking about how many opportunities are we going to let slip away," unquote. "We let the opportunity to play in the Super Bowl slip away. I'm someone to blame for this loss." 10 years on, it killed Favre that he hadn't led his team back to the Super Bowl. We are now going on year 13 since Rodgers' one and only Super Bowl appearance. Yet, when Pat McAfee asked what his goals are for next season, when he'll be 40 years old, this is what Rodgers said.
He thought he could win MVP again if he were put in the right situation.
On the Up and Adams podcast with former NFL Network personality Kay Adams, this is what former Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski, who won four Super Bowl rings in tandem with Tom Brady, had to say about Rodgers' 2023 goals.
"Bro, like, why are you thinking MVP? Like, don't you want Super Bowls? Like, Super Bowls are I think, five times greater than an MVP award. Like, we all know that you won the MVP a few times now, but, like, everyone would know even more how many more Super Bowls you've won than MVP. So that's why I'm just a little confused about that."
Rodgers thinks of Brady as both his arch rival and measuring stick for success. Yet how they measure success is completely divergent. Rodgers has four MVP awards, second all-time only to Peyton Manning. Brady has three. Yet Brady went to 10 Super Bowls, twice as many as any other quarterback in NFL history, and has won seven. The second highest by any other QB? Four. Rodgers, meanwhile, though he has a Super Bowl ring, has played in just one, exactly as many as NFL luminaries like Rex Grossman and Trent Dilfer. The ego that bears, ESPN's Pablo Torre said on Pardon the Interruption, simply takes your breath away.
"The funny thing is about Aaron Rodgers is that, look, part of this whole thing about how he's different, he took ayahuasca, he took these psychedelics, he embraced ego death. That was the whole alleged upshot of his shamanic ceremonies. And I would like to debut a new take that I have. Aaron Rodgers maybe didn't do enough ayahuasca."
We will get to Rodgers' shamanic ceremonies and beliefs in other forms of pseudoscience. But we also need to look at the purpose behind what he said to Pat McAfee. This, PTI co-host Tony Kornheiser said, was the intended message.
"What he was doing was saying to the Green Bay Packers, I'm not sure I want to be back with you at all. I don't think we can win a Super Bowl. I don't even care about the $50 million. And what he was saying to the rest of the league was, hey, give me a call. I still got it. I'm good."
This is a level of look at me that even Brett Favre, who retired and unretired for three straight postseasons before finally retiring for good in 2011, couldn't ever hope to hold a candle to. There's something instructive in hearing Favre's first retirement speech in March 2008. Especially in relation to how Rodgers has flirted with the idea of retiring.
"I hope that every penny that they've spent on me, they know it was money well spent. It was never about the money or fame or records. And I hear people talk about your accomplishments and things that... It was never my accomplishments. It was our accomplishments. The teammates that I played with, and I can name so many. It was never about me. It was about everybody else. Just so happens that the position I played got most of the attention."
The retirement lasted all of 3 months before Favre unretired for the first time. This, he told ESPN, is how new Packers head coach Mike McCarthy reacted to the news. Quote, he said, "Oh God, Brett, You're putting us in a tight spot. Brett, playing here is not an option. Those were his exact words, unquote. And with those words, the Packers anointed Aaron Rodgers as their next starting quarterback. He led them to the playoffs in his second year, a Super Bowl win in his third, and won his first MVP award in his fourth. Brett who? That Brett met with then-Mayor Mike Bloomberg at City Hall. It now seems inevitable that Rodgers would follow the same path as the man he detested as a fresh-out-of-college QB. At age 39, it looks like he'll be traded from the Packers to the Jets. Can you imagine a photo op with Aaron Rodgers and Eric Adams? I imagine the conversation would be two people talking past each other, telling grandiose stories about themselves. But how exactly did we reach this point? Was it Mike McCarthy twice settling for field goals inside the Seahawks' 5-yard line before going into a slowdown offense with a 16-0 lead in the third quarter of the 2014 NFC Championship game against Seattle, only to watch an epic overtime collapse? Was it 2 years later when the Falcons annihilated the Packers in the conference championship game in Atlanta, before blowing a 25-point second-half lead to Tom Brady in New England? When Rodgers had to have 13 screws and 2 plates inserted into his right collarbone in 2017? Or was it when the Packers slid to 6-9-1 in a 2018 season that featured Rodgers bus-tossing McCarthy when the Packers fired him with 4 games left, after having trashed his offense 4 weeks into the season?
You know they're going to side with the player and not the coach, so ultimately they're not winning games. You lose to Arizona, it's a bad loss. When you lose to Arizona coming to Green Bay, everything tells you that's all favors you, 13-point favors or whatever the number was, but in your home, you know you win, you continue to push for the playoffs. All of those things had to happen when you come out and lay an egg. And when Aaron said, I thought we were flat, I thought we were all of those things, that leads to say they weren't prepared to play.
Each event foretold a nasty split to come between Rodgers and the Packers. But it might never have reached this point had the Packers not been such weak-kneed enablers of Rodgers' continued bad behavior. Entering the ultimately disastrous 2018 season, the Packers had already succumbed to his demands that they renegotiate a 5-year contract with a year remaining. In 2014, Rodgers had signed a 5-year, $110 million contract, making him the league's highest-paid player. 4 years later, he wasn't anymore, and so, with the threat of free agency hanging over their heads, the Packers succumbed to his contract demands. They handed him a 4-year deal that would give Rodgers essentially $80 million of the $140 million in the first year alone. The contract made Rodgers the highest-paid NFL player on an annual basis and gave him the largest ever contract guarantee, $103 million. And to cover the signing bonus, the Packers dipped into their reserve fund. No mention was made of where they were now going to come up with money under the salary cap to actually better the rest of the team. What were the Packers doing? Rodgers was 35, coming off a broken collarbone in his throwing shoulder, followed by a lost season in which he took no responsibility for anything. So now, Rodgers has pushed out McCarthy and the Packers hire Matt LaFleur, who's barely older than Rodgers, has 2 years' experience as an NFL offensive coordinator and exactly none as a head coach at any level. Inevitably, there was going to be a clash of some sort between Rodgers and LaFleur. It came 2 years later against Rodgers' arch-rival Tom Brady. Packers versus Bucks, with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. The Bucks behind Brady took a 28-10 lead early in the third quarter before Rodgers led the Packers back. Down 31-23, with 4.5 minutes to go in the fourth, they took possession at their own 34-yard line and drove down to set up a first and goal at the Tampa Bay 8-yard line with 2:22 left in the game. They could tie it with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. If you're looking to intentionally alienate a quarterback, there is no greater textbook example on how to do so than the following 4 plays that took place. Incomplete on first down, and again on second down. Then this.
The story of the game is the third down and the fourth down with the Packers. On the third down, when Aaron Rodgers seems to have the whole right side of the field available to him so he could at least get inside the 5, on third down, at least he could slide at the 5 or something like that, giving him a fourth down play that's more manageable. So he throws it instead I would say that he made the wrong decision. And then Matt LaFleur decides, well, we'll kick a field goal. We'll get the ball back because we've got four timeouts. We got three timeouts and the two-minute warning.
Yeah, that wasn't my decision. But I understand the thinking above 2 minutes with all of our timeouts, but yeah, that wasn't my decision.
Rodgers will not be the quarterback of Green Bay again. That's it. You saw his last game.
Tony Kornheiser there the morning after the game, predicting Rodgers would never play for Green Bay again, and Rodgers' reaction to his coach's fourth down decision. Kornheiser was wrong, but perhaps things would have been better all around, had he been right. To steal a line from Charles Dickens heading into the 2021 season, it was the best of times, and it was the worst of times in Green Bay. For two straight seasons, Rodgers had been named MVP, while also falling a game short of the Super Bowl. And heading into his age 38 season, 3 years older than Favre was when they drafted him, Rodgers was ancient by NFL standards for any QB not named, ironically, Tom Brady. So rather than sign or draft a free agent wide receiver, the Packers traded up to select Utah State QB Jordan Love in the first round, further drawing Rodgers' ire. In a world-class show of understatement, Rodgers said his first reaction was quote-unquote, surprise. Pat McAfee summed it all up on draft night.
Jordan Love, quarterback, Utah State.
Oh, no.
Walk it off.
He's out.
Bro.
Will Aaron answer his phone now?
No. We should not call.
Walk it off was to one of the show's producers, presumably a Packers and Rodgers fan who got up from his computer and walked out of the studio when the pick was announced. Frankly, I'd have loved to have heard Rodgers talk that night, but he showed with his play what he would have said. You want revenge tour Aaron Rodgers? The guy who lights up the league? You got him. Rodgers began his 2021 tour de force by skipping mandatory minicamp in a standoff with management. Perhaps thinking there was no other choice, the Packers backed down, offering Rodgers the olive branch of calling the absences excused, and thereby alleviating the burden of more than $500,000 in accumulated fines. After a week one loss, the Packers won seven straight behind Rodgers, who threw 17 TD passes and was picked off just once. Then, he tested positive for COVID, and it came out that an unvaccinated Rodgers had been flaunting NFL COVID protocol. He'd purposely misled the public to believe he'd been vaccinated, while in actuality, he was not. He'd somehow badgered, or snookered, the Packers into letting him follow the vaccinated player protocol. Rodgers referred to the NFL protocol as a quote-unquote witch hunt. He talked to his pal Joe Rogan about taking ivermectin to ward off COVID, something recommended by Donald Trump, but not by the FDA, which publicly said it had not authorized or approved the drug to treat COVID in animals or humans. Sitting on his couch, recovering from COVID and watching the Jordan Love-led Packers lose to Kansas City 13-7, Rodgers told reporters he took responsibility for misleading folks on his immunization/vaccination status, while saving the truth for Pat McAfee.
I'm not some sort of anti-vax flat earther. I am somebody who's a critical thinker. You guys know me, I march to the beat of my own drum. I believe strongly in bodily autonomy and the ability to make choices for your body, not to have to acquiesce to some woke culture or crazed group of individuals who say you have to do something. Health is not a one-size-fits-all. I put a lot of time and energy and research and met with a lot of different people in the medical field to get the most information about the vaccines before making a decision.
When he returned, Rodgers picked up where he'd left off. But Hub Arkish, Bears reporter and publisher of Pro Football Weekly, felt moved to publicly state flat out he would not vote for Rodgers for 2021 NFL MVP, an award Rodgers went on to win. Arkish told Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel on Chicago's 670 The Score that Rodgers' off-field behavior overshadowed his on-field performance.
I do think he hurt his team on the field by the way he acted off the field. They're going to get the number one seed anyway, but what if the difference had come down to the Chiefs game, you know, where he lied about being vaccinated and ended up not playing and they got beat? So I think all these things should be considerations. That's the way I look at it. He ruined the entire offseason for that football team. They were left in jeopardy. They had no idea what they were doing. He tortured his fan base, and he's getting ready. He's already started doing it again. I think he's a bad guy, and I don't think a bad guy can be the most valuable guy at the same time.
After a spectacular flameout at home, a 13-10 loss to the 49ers in a snowstorm, this is how Rodgers framed his football future.
Hey, Aaron, when we talked to you last year at this time, you called your future a beautiful mystery and all that. Where'd your future stand?
I did not think we'd be talking about this after this game, but, you know, I'm going to take some time and have conversations with the folks around here and then take some time away and make a decision, obviously, before free agency or anything kind of gets going on that front. But, you know, it's fresh right now. It's you know, a little shocking for sure.
After some quiet contemplation, Rodgers held the Packers over the proverbial contract barrel again, coming away with a three-year, $150 million contract. 2 days later, Davante Adams, his favorite wide receiver and the Packers' second-best player, asked for and received a trade out of Green Bay. Curd and Long podcast co-host Sparky Pfeiffer explains his understanding of the machinations behind the trade on Chicago 670 The Score's Bernstein and Holmes show.
He wanted to get this extension done the previous training camp, before he became a free agent going into that lame duck year. He wanted to get a deal done. And the Packers kept pushing him off. No, 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 we're waiting on Aaron. We got to figure out what we're going to do with Aaron. And I think that eventually just rubbed him the wrong way. Like, okay, well, then clearly you don't want me that much. If this is all about 12 and you can't commit to me until you figure out what you're going to do with 12, then clearly it's not all about me. And because Rodgers, every offseason, is, I don't know if I want to play. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. And doing the Brett Favre thing, Devonta didn't want to be in that situation every offseason about not knowing who his quarterback is.
Ken Lass of the Cheesehead.tv blog wrote that in 2021, Rodgers would too often force the ball to Adams rather than trusting his other receivers, an assertion the numbers back up. During the regular season, 46.4% of his targets to his wide receiver core were to Adams. In the 49ers' loss, he threw to Adams 11 times. The other wide receivers combined for 8. Had he not been hurt at the time, Marquez Valdez-Scantling would definitely have seen his share of passes as well. Rodgers actually liked and trusted him and talked him up publicly, but Valdez-Scantling would leave as well. His price in free agency got to a point the Packers couldn't afford him. With Rodgers' new contract, I can't imagine why that might be. So, his two favorite receivers are gone, replaced by rookies Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. Yet, the 2022 offseason proceeded as the one before it. Rodgers skipped minicamp and failed to build any kind of relationship with his wide receivers. The consequences would come in Week 7, when the Packers fell to 3-4 after losing to the Giants and Jets, before following that up with a completely flat performance against Washington. Asked what went wrong in that game, particularly on third down, Rodgers had this to say.
Execution of the details, small details, a lot of mental errors. Now, we had some issues with guys getting hurt, but yeah, we just made some silly execution mistakes.
Here's Sparky Pfeiffer again on how Rodgers' failures as a leader crystallized in this moment, followed by an analysis of Rodgers' words from Washington Post and CBS NFL reporter Jason Lockenfora on the Tony Kornheiser show.
At least show up at OTAs, put the work in, and that didn't happen. He showed up at the mandatory one. He was there for that one. And the rest of the time, it was Randall Cobb playing the conduit between Rodgers and the wide receivers and telling the wide receivers what Aaron Rodgers likes and doesn't like. And Randall Cobb was kind of the good guy to the bad guy of Aaron Rodgers.
If you parse words even a little with his media tour the last 2 weeks, it's clear that he's putting a lot of this on the coach. And it's clear that he thinks he knows better than the coach, not just about scheme, right? Not just about philosophy, not just about play calling, but also a division of labor. Who should play and who should?
Exactly.
Who should be on the field? Who should be active? Who should be up for these games? And who should be cast off back to the practice squad or as a game day inactive?
I really like Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a great quarterback. If I played with him, I'd want to punch him in the head. Right?
Yeah.
This is absolutely ridiculous. Rodgers, who'd torn the team to shreds for not helping out on offense in years prior, is the reason the Packers' player options, particularly after injuries hit the team, were so limited. Rodgers then doesn't help out the rookies, rips them publicly, and has one of the worst statistical seasons of his career. And if his playing days with the Packers are indeed over, what a way to go out. It was win and go to the playoffs, lose and go home. Green Bay, 10-2 at home versus Detroit with Rodgers under center. Detroit, nothing to play for but pride. Final result, third straight season-ending loss at Lambeau Field. And what was most likely his final throw as a Packer was, like Favre 15 years earlier, game-ending interception. This is what Rodgers had to say about his future after the loss.
It's a little raw right now. You know, it's just a little bit off game, so I want to take the emotion out of it and have the conversations and see where the organization's at and see how I feel after some time has passed.
Listen to how that compares with what he said a year previously.
I'm going to take some time and have conversations with the folks around here and then take some time away and make a decision.
As Tony Kornheiser puts it, Aaron Rodgers is a whole one-man show, but you might not like the act.
There's so much drama. He bathes in drama.
I'm not against contemplation or the exploration of one's mental health to decide if continuing to play a violent game when you're about to turn 40 is the right thing for you at this point in life, and whether it will make you happy. I'm also hardly opposed to the idea of someone wanting to use ayahuasca as part of a therapeutic treatment either. According to the National Institute of Health, the drug is supposed to lower subjective ratings of stress and depression through, quote, changes in affect, satisfaction with life, and mindfulness that were significantly related to the level of ego dissolution experienced during the ayahuasca ceremony, end quote. Rodgers credits ayahuasca with making him a better quarterback. He did win two MVP awards after he began using it, but it sure didn't help him win playoff games. Nor did it make him a better teammate or employee, as he made each postseason a melodrama starring himself, in which every episode ended on this cliffhanger. Will Rodgers return to the Packers next year? But no one in Green Bay seems willing to pick up the option on another year of this. And so Rodgers, on his way out the door, is looking to land the M. Night Shyamalan surprise ending. And Jason Lockenfora explains the rest of the plot on the Tony Kornheiser show.
He wants to make it look like they didn't want me, even though they know he doesn't want to be back there. That will allow him to further his hate campaign internally against them, and then he's going to go out there and show them who's boss. You were holding me back. I wasn't holding you back.
In fact, it's always been the other way around.
Aaron Rodgers has made a cottage industry out of effing with the Green Bay Packers.
Right. Clearly, the Packers were wrong in assuming Aaron Rodgers wouldn't mess with them again 1 year after signing a three-year deal. But why would they have ever thought that? They have enabled him and his me-first attitude at every turn, just as they enabled Favre's hemming and hawing about retirement for years on end before that. In fact, it was only when the Packers forced a decision that Favre actually retired for the first time and the Packers moved on. Rodgers has never faced a similar accountability moment. Instead, every time such a possible confrontation with Rodgers crops up, the team backs down. To the members of the Packers management team negotiating with Rodgers, here's an old gambling adage. If you look around the table and can't figure out who the mark is, it's you. Fortunately for you, there's a bigger whale at the table ready to pony up even more, the New York Jets. It's an off-season Christmas present for Rodgers, a new team to mess with. How do we know he will? According to ESPN's Diana Rossini, Rodgers has this wish list of wide receivers for the Jets to sign. Three current Packers, wideouts Alan Lazard, whose signing with the Jets was announced the day after the report came out, Randall Cobb, and tight end Marcedes Lewis, plus free agent wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. Cobb, despite being on the downside of his career, has been identified as the Rodgers whisperer to young receivers. Though if you're just transferring everyone over, you don't really need Cobb for that. So, good to have friends in high places. Marcedes Lewis turns 39 in May and had exactly 7 passes thrown his way in 17 games last season, which is more than can be said for Beckham, who tore his ACL in the Rams' Super Bowl win over Cincinnati more than a calendar year ago. He remains an unsigned free agent. In his weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee show, Rogers had this to say.
People want these things to be so true. They're like, I'm in this meeting, you know, dressed in ceremony regalia, giving them some sort of like handwritten on parchment demand list of people they need to sign.
He's talked before about wanting his opinion about the team's construction to be considered. Someone being paid an average of $50 million per season is not giving out suggestions out of the goodness of his heart. He wants action taken on them. Now. Several years after he retired, Brett Favre spoke to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about how he wants to be remembered.
For me, how I played, how things played out in Green Bay, all those things, it is what it is, you know, and there's nothing you can do about it. Make no mistake about it. I want to be remembered as a Packer. My 16 years in Green Bay is so important to me as it is, I think, for the Packer fans. And that's why going to play somewhere else, if I didn't leave an impact, who would have cared? Yeah. I realized the impact that I left in Green Bay. I also realized the impact that it left when I went and played for the for the rival.
Is it possible Aaron Rodgers will do this or say he wants to be remembered as a Packer at all? Maybe, if it involves being irrevocably declared the best player in franchise history. Because we've learned it's all about him, always, that even beneath all that ego destruction is just more ego. The story of Aaron Rodgers is all about Aaron Rodgers, and that's why so many people seem not to want to talk to him or about him. Or when they do, they only have negative things to say. And I wonder if Aaron Rodgers' best friend, Pat McAfee, will have the same time for him after he retires and is no longer the same kind of newsmaker he is now. Will he still have his weekly show appearances, or will it be radio silence? Eventually, bad teammates get tossed over, even if it doesn't happen until they no longer make good content. Until then, to the Jets, have fun with this. This episode of Wrecking the Toy Department was written, voiced, edited, and produced by me, Jake Williams. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend and leave a review and rating on iTunes. Thank you for listening.